You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702 Masterclass.
Today we bring you a masterclass of a story that started in 2013 is when the discovery of the Rising Star Cave was made. And then in 2015, we got the news as the cradle of humankind became the center of the scientific world that there was an incredible finding which shed some light on the history of the human species. So Professor Lee Berger, along with his colleagues, ended up making it into Time magazine's, he made it into Time magazine, I should say, 100 most influential people in the world for his role in the discovery of Homo naledi. And the team that has worked on this discovery has gone on, of course, to write papers to contribute to our understanding of what this rising star cave actually had, and of course their understanding on the species Homo naledi. There's still lots of mysteries surrounding Homo naledi, and we're catching up this afternoon with Professor Lee Berger, especially in light of last week's announcement around new developments, another finding about the skull of a child, partial skull of a Homo naledi child, and they've named this one Litimela, and aka Lady, just short for Lady Litimela in Setswana, the one who got lost. So today's masterclass is an attempt to take you inside the Rising Star Cave and everything that it holds, and what's been found, in fact, by this team out of Wits University. And of course, we try and tell the story of Lady. We'll take your questions on 011-883-0702, your comments as well, 072-702-1702. Professor Lee Berger, thank you so much for joining us. Good to have you on the show once more. Yeah.
No, thank you so much, Azania, and hello to all your listeners.
Yeah, it's been exciting, I must say, to see that there's more. This cave seems to be the gift that just keeps on giving. I see that your team has been writing papers to outline what exactly you have found in the open access journal Paleoanthropology. The team of 21 researchers from Wits University, the 13 other universities that have been involved, and you were part of this announcement of the discovery of parts of the skull and teeth of a child that you believe died almost 250 years ago. So tell me tell me about Leti. Tell me about the skull.
So it's 250,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit longer than 250. I think it's worth
going back. No, 250,000 years ago. Ages ago. She'd be a contemporary if it was in the context of
right.
Yeah, the age of the planet.
It'd actually be it bigger news.
Yeah.
I think it's worth going back and talking about those original discoveries from Rising Star, because to place for those people who maybe aren't as familiar with Homo naledi and haven't followed the story of this remarkable ancient species, back in 2013, as you said, we discovered the remains of a small-brained ancient human relative just lying on the floor and in the floor of a very remote chamber in the Rising Star Cave system. Now, the Rising Star Cave system is just across the road from the famous sites of Sterkfontein and Swartkrans, if people have been out in the area of the Cradle of Humankind. And yet, this discovery had remained undiscovered, largely because of the extraordinarily remote location of this chamber. It's almost 150 meters back in a cave, 30 to 40 meters underground. Our explorers have to squeeze down a 12-meter vertical chute that narrows to 16 centimeters in some places before you enter this chamber. Mm. And inside of this chamber, it's actually a series of small chambers, were these remains just lying on the floor. Now, that was unusual as it was. We'd never seen ancient human remains, particularly ones as primitive as this, just lying on a floor like that. Usually they're encased in concrete like rock, and they take us months or years to get out. When we got it out and we assembled a global team to look at these remains and study them, we found out that we discovered this very small-brained ancient human relative. Now, I'll use the word hominid just to simplify that, of a bipedal animal that's an ape, but more like a human than an ape. And they had a small brain, about a third to a quarter the size of a modern human's. They had teeth that were very small, the size of a modern human's, but primitive in shape. They had sort of prognathic faces, which have, their faces stuck a little bit out like an ape, more so than the flat faces of human. Their shoulders were quite ape-like, but as you move down the limbs towards the hands, they became more and more human-like and almost had superhuman hands. They had sort of ape-shaped thoraxes and pelvises or primitive pelvis. And then they became human-like again from sort of halfway down the pelvis, down the legs, so they have almost completely human-like. This was totally bizarre. And it appeared to be the type of thing that you would find millions of years ago, maybe 2 million years ago. And it looked like a mix of species that some people may have heard of, like Homo habilis and Homo erectus, but it cleared. It was not a human. But here you had this thing that didn't look very fossilized. And didn't look, you know, looked like it had come there in the relatively recent past. But we couldn't date it because of the situation, at least at that time. 2 years later, we would announce the new species, Homo naledi. Naledi, obviously meaning star, and that in honor of the rising star came. We would call that chamber Dinaledi. And when we announced a species, that enough was a tremendous news. You know, new species of ancient human relatives don't come along every day. But we also said something that at the time was considered perhaps the most controversial thing. And that was that when we found these remains, they were the only thing in the cave. That is, there's no other animals associated with them, except a couple of little mouse and rat teeth that may have actually crawled in there. But they were alone. That alone was unique amongst all discoveries in the history of looking for human origin in Africa or anywhere else. And so we said something very controversial. We said that if you had found this humans like this, you would say that this was some sort of deliberate ritual practice or disposal of the dead. Well, that caused a huge uproar.
Yeah.
It caused an uproar around the world because people said, this is a non-human species. Its brain's too small. And that's what humans do. It's one of the few things that completely separates us from the animal kingdom. Mm-hmm. And so some archaeologists said, excuse me, you can't say that. And we said, well, you know, we don't see any other way that these could have got in there. There's no carnivore damage, no scavenging. They weren't washed in there. We have no evidence of them being, you know, anything collapsing on them and all that. Well, we kind of froze there. After we announced that, and we started publishing on the anatomy, and would eventually, a year later, publish on the date of Homo naledi, and that was equally shocking, because it was, as you said, around 230 to 330,000 years ago, and the best date around 250,000 years. Mm. That again seemed impossible to the world,
because that would mean that we were roaming as well. Humans were here at that time.
In fact, Tanya, at that time, at that very moment when we announced that, every archaeologist or paleoanthropologist or people who study this in the world would have said only Homo sapiens lived in Africa at that time. Mm-hmm. And we were suddenly dropping this thing, this non-human species, a bipedal ape that's, you know, into the midst of this that looked like it had tool-using hands and all these other adaptations that just shouldn't be there. Right into the middle of this time and place where we thought it was effectively owned by humans. We thought humans had wiped everything else out, or at least outbred everything that had come previously. And that caused everyone to pause, because the date was very solid. Mm-hmm. You could tell from these that they weren't that old. You know, they weren't millions of years old, these fossils. Well, we kept exploring. And by that time, no one had actually disproved that original hypothesis that this was a ritual or repeated deliberate body disposal practice. And then we found another chamber about 80 meters away from the first that we called the Lacetti chamber.
Yes,
a chamber
I
of
saw.
Light. And there
I saw the maps, in fact, the maps that you made available. It's quite an expansive cave network. So there's the Dinaledi Chamber, the Lesedi Chamber. Then, when you think of the southern and northern chambers, and then there's a section that's called the Toilet Bowl. But it's
3.5 kilometers
wow.
of underground system.
Yes.
3.5 kilometers.
How much of that have you explored at the so far?
Well, we've mapped 3.5 kilometers.
Yeah, yeah.
we haven't. We know there's more there.
Mm.
We can see on the surface collapsed areas. We can see places where there must be cave underneath, but we've yet to be able to get to them.
Mm.
Hopefully technology, drones, robots, that type of thing will allow us to move into spaces that humans can't go into.
Mm-hmm.
But we found this Lesedi chamber, and there was this male skeleton that we called Neo up in a shelf-like area, just literally the skeleton lying in a shelf. So kind of like the first situation in the Dinaledi chamber, but different. And we said, well, we couldn't find any other reason that he's there, and a couple of juvenile remains were in this chamber, other than possibly the same reason, that members of his own species had placed him there after death.
Mm-hmm.
That, again, was controversial, but, again, beginning to be a little less so, as we kept finding these chambers just with Naledi.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the story of Little Letty. In 2017, in fact, September of 2017, we pushed back beyond the original chamber, the Dinaledi chamber. And people said, well, why didn't you do that earlier? Well, they have to understand the difficulty of this cave system.
Mm-hmm.
It's extraordinarily difficult. To move just a few meters beyond the Dinaledi chamber, we move into a chamber that the explorers named the Chaos Chamber. Now, these are people who spend a lot of their time underground. When they start calling things chaos,
it's telling about just getting there.
It's telling that to move just a few meters beyond would take them, 5 or 10 minutes, and only our smallest and fittest cavers could actually get into that. They then moved through the Chaos Chamber, which has a length of about 8 meters or so, into a series of network of passages. Now, imagine, if you will, this lattice or sort of checkerboard area of narrow, narrow passages. When I say narrow, I mean they average around 15 centimeters wide.
Wow, that's half a ruler. That's half a ruler.
It's half a ruler. And our people are squeezing into there.
Yeah.
Often removing their helmets and even removing the overalls that they're in so they can squeeze into these spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And moving back through these spaces, largely we were just trying to map.
And it's not a single level, is it? It's up, down, making your way through.
Up, down, all over the place.
Yeah.
Now, here, some of those, they're very high. They sort of have 5, 10, maybe 15 meters, but we can't see where the top of them go because they can't get up in here. But we're working in areas that you're moving up and down 2 or 3 meters in this, even having to go upside down to pass through these.
Oh, wow.
And in one of these passages, 12 meters beyond the Dinaledi chamber, and that's a very long 12 meters to move. Let me say that it probably takes the best cavers 10, 12 minutes to move that.
Wow.
Now just pace out 12 meters in a room and then try to walk it in 12 minutes.
In 12 minutes.
And you'll get an idea of kind of what they're going through.
Yes.
And on a little shelf of dirt, then covered with a thin layer of limestone, they saw some fragmentary remains.
Mm. Let's take a break. Let's take a break, Prof, on that suspense-filled note, because we finally arrived. But we want to see what it is they found in this dramatic fashion you've been telling us. Let's take a break. My guest is Professor Lee Berger, and we're taking you inside the Rising Star Cave, this network of different chambers. We're now inside the Lesedi Chamber, and Professor Lee Berger is going to continue to break down exactly the significance and the intricacies of the Homo Naledi discovery, but also more recently the announcement around the Lady Litimela skull that they found. 702 Masterclass.
It's now 24 minutes past two, and we continue our masterclass with Professor Lee Berger, and we're looking at the new discovery out of the Rising Star Cave, which is just north of Johannesburg, at around the cradle of humankind. And this time around, they've made a new discovery. Can you tell us more about that, Prof, now that we're inside the Lesedi chamber? Right. What did they find?
So we brought you to this extraordinarily difficult place to reach to. There they see these fragments of bone and some teeth lying on the ground. They came out. We had to figure out ways of working in this environment. We came up with an excavation plan because we like to record, you know, the position of these things. Sent the team back in there. And out they recovered 28 fragments of a skull and six teeth. Now, we knew immediately that this was something very special to us because we could tell from the teeth that this was a juvenile individual. Mm. And the way we could tell that was it had both adult teeth, that is, that were unerupted. That is, they hadn't formed their roots yet. So, you know, as you know, those teeth grow in the face of a child and then they push out the baby teeth.
Yes.
And it had baby teeth. And so we knew immediately we had a baby. And we were very excited to have a skull and the teeth dentition of a child, because this may sound horribly morbid if you're not in the field of this, but we love to find dead children. And the reason we love that is, one, they are extremely rare. If adult hominids are the rarest sought after objects on Earth, and some people think they are, then children are probably 10 or 20 times as rare, because their bones just don't preserve. They're fragile and they're growing and they're thin. And yet they contain tremendous information about ancient species. Remember, this isn't a human. Non-human species of human relative. And they contain tremendous information because we learn about growth and development. We learn about whether they're undergoing stress, because their little bones and actual enamel in their teeth can show us if they're having like weaning stress even, or whether they're going through periods of starvation. Mm. And all these things and other things about the growth and development of species are packed into these skeletal remains.
So what they ate? Yep. Because as you said, because they weren't buried within rock, there are no sediments or any other remains around what life was about, what they used as tools and other aspects of life. Does this then start to give us certain clues about maybe what they ate?
It will unlock exactly what they ate eventually. Unfortunately, we were just in the process of doing the sort of chemistry and isotopic analysis of the dentition of Homo naledi in late 2019 in some of the most sophisticated labs around the world, mm-hmm. when something happened to the whole world, and therefore, which has sort of paused all of those studies. Mm-hmm. These remains will tell us what Homo naledi ate. It'll tell us, for example, even things like when little Letty was weaned off of milk, for example, mm-hmm. and started eating hard foods. We can actually see those stress lines in the dentition.
Wow.
But those studies are to come. But they will reveal that. And that'll be incredible. And also studies of using high-energy X-rays like synchrotron that can do submicron scanning will allow us to tell to within a few days how old Letty was when she died. Right now, we've said she's between about 4 and 6 years old based on her dental eruption, but that's a really broad guess. Mm. We literally will be able to, at some stage, to say she died within, you know, at say, you know, 1,200 days, 1,207 days, that type of accuracy eventually. That's the value of having these very young individuals like this. So we were very excited.
Yeah.
And we put together a scientific team there. But there was a second part of this story that I think has got, and part of why we call her Letemela is because of where she is.
Mm-hmm.
She's there alone. And by the way, I use she before anyone asks that. We have yet to determine whether it is a male or female. But she does have particularly small teeth for a Homo naledi, so it may be a female. We will also solve that. sometime in the future, as we use ancient proteins, we will know what sex little Eddie was at the time, a male or female, with ancient proteins. But again, COVID got in the way of sampling that material in labs in Europe, particularly. But here we were with this wonderful child skull. It was the first time we'd ever found remains of the skull associated with remains of the dentition of the same individual, of a child. We had several adult skulls.
Yes. I want to also find out who else, or what else you found, I should rather say. And let's take a break, though. And why was it only the skull when it comes to the lady discovery in that Lesedi chamber? And the fact that she was alone. So we'll delve into some of these other details as we continue our conversation. Got to bring you the latest in Eyewitness News headlines.
702.
Masterclass.
And we're back with Professor Lee Berger, research professor in human evolution and the public understanding of science at Wits University. And we're exploring last week's announcement around the finding that they've made in the Lesedi chamber. This is a part of the Rising Star Cave, situated in and around the cradle of humankind. And this follows the 2015 announcement of the Homo Naledi finding. So this time around, we're exploring the finding of a child believed to be between the ages of 4 and 6, but dating and other tests that are set to be done on these remains will give us a much closer analysis or much closer age range for this child. So Prof, let's look at what you found in that part of the Lesedi chamber exactly. It sounds like just the skull. Where the rest of the remains?
So just before I do that, Azania, just a funny aside about Takalani Sesame. The former CEO of National Geographic, Gary Nell, is the person who actually brought Takalani Sesame to South Africa. And he's a good friend of mine and supported a lot of this work originally. So that little skull was sitting on this little sort of thin layer of limestone on a shelf about 80 centimeters above the floor. There were no other remains with it. It's a Homo naledi child, that's clear. It's got a small brain that would have grown up to be between about 480 to 600 cubic centimeters, so about a third the size of a human's. And the skulls are alone. There are no parts of the body. The most fragile bones of the skull are there. There's no lower jaw. There are no lower teeth. And as we puzzled with this, in and out, you know, continuing to look around, you wonder why would a skull and the most fragile parts of a skull survive and the rest of the body wouldn't, which has much stronger bones. You know, your bone, your humerus, your femur, the pelvis, these things should have been there. Yeah. And we came to the conclusion that they never were there. Yet there's no signs of scavenger marks or predator marks on this little skull. We can tell from the sediment that was washed in there. And that leaves us with this great conundrum for little Lenny. How did her head get there? How did her skull get there? And, you know, right now we can't test that. We can't actually test this, but we came to the conclusion that there really must be no other way than her skull after death. At least part of her face and skull must have been moved to this remote location and placed above the ground on this little shelf, most likely by another member of her species. And that goes back to that idea that I started with of there being something very special about the Rising Star cave system to Homo naledi. The idea that they were perhaps using this in a way that we thought until this discovery that only humans use remote spaces, that is to take care of and keep their dead away from the natural processes that go on to all other animals in the outside world. Mm-hmm. It's why humans use crypts. It's why they build crypts. It's why humans use caves like this in many parts of the world to keep their dead and to treat them specially. But I want to repeat this. Homo naledi's not a human. Mm-hmm. We don't even know if Homo naledi is directly related to living humans as of yet.
Yeah, so let's look at that evolutionary tree, if I can put it that way. So have you found a place? Are we closer to placing hominality on that tree?
We're not right now. What we know about hominality right now is from its anatomy. And its anatomy is immensely confusing.
Yeah.
It looks like no other species ever found, which we sometimes think we have an easier time placing on the evolutionary bush or tree, or I like to use braided string, because we know that that many species inbred with humans and our relatives in the past. What we know is that hominality carries characters of very ancient hominid. Some hominids we think are related to us, like Homo erectus. Some hominids we think they're related to us, like Homo habilis. And it interestingly shares a few characters only with Homo sapiens that no other ancient human relative yet found.
Wow.
Actually shares. Now, we don't know whether we got those from Homo naledi, or did Homo naledi get those from us, or are they completely independently developed? But what is profound, I think, in this, is that whatever the answer to that relationship is, we are potentially looking at a species that behaved with a level of complexity mm-hmm. that until the moment of this discovery, we thought was unique to humans. And here's an important point. We can only demonstrate that they practiced almost 150,000 to 200,000 years after the events occurred in Rising Star Cave.
Wow. Are there any hypotheses around why these remains would be the way they are?
Well, I mean, you've got to go to the idea that Homo naledi may have been thinking about life and death. It may have recognized death. It may have recognized that the processes of death that occur to other animals, you know, when you die in the African environment or any other, your body typically goes through some very unpleasant processes, largely due with other animals eating you and distributing you if you're an animal. And humans have recognized that at least for the last 50 to 80,000 years, therefore go to great lengths universally to perform rituals around their dead that often are removing them from that process. And that says a lot of things about the mind of humans. That is because we recognize that we are going to die too. Mm. We often do that. We recognize that death is permanent. And many animals don't seem to have that concept. That is that we know death is permanent. That's why we can bury someone. We know they're not coming back. And so what we may be seeing with this non-human species, small brain hominid, are behaviors that relate to a level of complexity we previously thought only humans had. That will have profound implications. If true, if we continue to test this hypothesis, and if we come up with other evidence that proves that, we'll have profound implications on the way we view humankind's special place in nature, because it may mean that it's not so special.
Mm. Help us piece what else you have found so far, because almost 2,000 individual fragments have been found so far. So how many individuals does that make? You mentioned a neo earlier on. So there's Homo naledi, there's now Homo neo, and now there's Leti as well.
Neo's the name of the skull.
The name of the skull.
That's like Leti. Yeah.
Okay.
He's also Homo naledi. He was a skeleton. I think our number is actually now closer to 2,500 individual remains. We have more individual remains of Homo naledi from the Rising Star Cave system than almost the entire other fossil record of ancient human relatives from the entire continent of Africa.
Wow.
That's how rich this site is. It's huge. And we know there are thousands of remains still in there. Mm. We're actually leaving those for future scientific work to test hypotheses because we have so many. We are well over 24 individuals, probably approaching 30 individuals so far of Homo naledi. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot to someone who's not in this field, but let me give you a concept of that. From Olduvai Gorge, a very famous site, right, in Tanzania, they found about 85 individual pieces of hominids. to place the perspective, and probably that's representing, you know, just a few individuals, and most of them just by isolated teeth. So we have we know a great deal about Homo naledi, and we know a great deal about all parts of his body. We found every single part of his body, and usually in multiple individuals. So we know a lot about this, and yet it remains one of the greatest mysteries, sort of 5 or 6 years on since its discovery, in the history of, since its announcement, in the history of the search for human origins.
Mm. Let's take a break. If you have any questions or comments, you're welcome to share those with us. 011-883-0702. 31702 for your SMSs, and then your voice notes and your WhatsApps on 072-702-1702. And we're speaking this afternoon to Professor Lee Berger, research professor in human evolution and the public understanding of science at Wits University, as we explore the announcement that was made last week around the finding of Leti. And this is at the Rising Star Cave, just north of Johannesburg, around the cradle of humankind.
702
Masterclass.
Concluding the masterclass, we've been in conversation for this past hour with Professor Lee Berger, research professor in human evolution and the public understanding of science at Wits University. I can remember after the announcement in 2015 about Homo naledi, the finding of Homo naledi, going off to the exhibition site at the Cradle of Humankind and experiencing what had been found. You know, the remains were there for a very limited period, and I can still see those bones, in fact, all laid out in explaining exactly what this particular species is, or what had been found, the significance of what had been found. Let's now take your calls and your WhatsApps. Here's a voice note. Please take a listen, Prof.
Hi, Aza and the Prof there. Just one question, man. How do they determine the years of these things? You know, when he says 250 years, how do they know exactly whether it's 250, 251? How do they know?
I saw a comment from one of your colleagues, Prof. Dr. Tebogo Makubela, who was saying that the geological age is 250, as you confirmed a little bit earlier on, that you've now managed to give it a bit of a range of when this species would have been about. So how is that done?
That's right, yeah. Well, this is done with a series of dating methods that deal with radioactive decay. What we did initially, actually, Tebogo Makubela, who is just fantastic. I think you may have had him on your show before, is really a front leader in the development of new technologies to particularly look at the limestones that layer, that form in these caves, and date them, looking at the decay of uranium within that to various inert, either gases or other inert forms. And what that does, since we know the decay rate of various types of radioactive material like uranium, when we find these that have formed initially in these flowstones that are limestones that border and bound the deposits around Homo naledi, they allow us to date the material that's between them. And we were able to date the material, the Homo naledi material, from the nearby Dinaledi chamber. That's where I gave you those ranges, and then where Tebogo is actually rightly correcting that we're pretty precisely hypothesizing at this point, based on these dating techniques, that those fossils from the 12-meter-away Dinaledi chamber are about 250,000 years old. We have not been able to date the area just around the Leti because she's sitting there alone on this very thin layer that we haven't been able to date yet. And so, but the preservation of her bones are exactly like those in the nearby Dinaledi chamber. And she's identical, at least her teeth are identical, and the parts of the face that we have of hers to adult Homo naledi dentition. Okay. And so for the time being, we're hypothesizing that she was, her bones were laid there at about the same time as the Dinaledi chamber. Mm-hmm. That, again, though, is something that we have to test in the future. Okay. That's a great question.
Yes, here's another one in that direction. Then we'll come to you, Phil. Just hang in there before we come to our calls. Just wanted to keep with this theme from this latest voice note.
Hi, 702. I've been listening to the show about the human remains that were found in the Cradle of Humankind. And my question is, if this area is so rich in the discovery of human remains from a long time ago, why does it have to be, why do the samples have to be sent to Europe for analysis, and why don't we have our own labs in South Africa to analyze these samples?
Okay, but obviously we have to emphasize that it's not human remains. This is, yes, an entirely different species, as you said at the beginning, that it has anatomical characteristics of modern, some anatomical characteristics of, modern humans, but it also has another ancestor, and we're not sure if that is maybe the apes. So it's not human, just to clarify. So why do some of
that's,
these...
That's absolutely right.
Yes, why do the samples
and
get sent to
you? I love that question, and unfortunately, you know what the answer is? It's all about money. And that is that that we haven't developed those labs because we haven't raised the money for that. So if anyone listening who wants to put the money into some of these very expensive labs, we would love to do that. We are looking at raising funds, particularly for things around like ancient proteins, bringing in some of the less expensive equipment like mass spectrometers. Now, when I'm saying less expensive, these are multi tens of million rand devices, and the labs build them cost enormous amounts. We have some of those labs, Tobocco's lab at UJ. We have some of the lab to do isotopic work, but we don't have as yet some of the labs that are kind of at the front of things like ancient proteins and some of the higher end isotopic labs yet. We would love to build them. Some of the things we may not build here, like synchrotrons, which cost billions and billions of euros or dollars to build. And we may never have those, or we may someday build those. But it really is a factor of where those labs, the most expensive labs, and hiring the expertise to run those lab tests. Some of them we have in South Africa, and we are really at the front of some of those areas, like Tobocco's lab here. But in other areas that we have to collaborate in order to get certain specific types of experiments being done. But if there's someone out there who wants to sponsor them, get in touch with me.
Absolutely. Let's quickly get this question from Phil, because we do have to wrap. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Professor, and is only a good show so far.
Welcome.
I've got an age-old question for the prof. It's quite simple. Are you, Professor, an evolutionist or a creationist? Would you like to nail your colors to the mast, sir?
Thank you for the question, Phil. Lucky we have we have only a little bit of time left, so you might get to escape.
Well, let me say this, that I am an evolutionary biologist by profession, But let me actually go around the more interesting part, I think, of that question, rather than what I stand by. Many people say, why is there... you have to be one or the other. And I think that as we've matured as scientists, we engage, I gave lectures at the Vatican just before COVID, and at a conference and symposium held by the Pontifical Academy. As we begin to explore more maturely the relationship between the understanding of what the role is of things like religion and these type of things in the development and spirituality and development of humans, and the role of science and the differences that are there. Evolution is a fact. We have undergone biological change through time, and that's what things like Homo Naledi tell us and show us and demonstrate us. The fact also is spirituality and religion exist amongst modern humans, and that is a different part of the exploration of what it means to be a human.
Thank you for the question, Phil. And also thank you for your time and unpacking all the happenings within the Rising Star Cave. And we look forward to more developments. It seems like it's going to be a story for for this particular generation. Thank you, Prof.
Thank you. And it will be, I assure you.
Yes. And that was, it would seem, a part two of a masterclass on hominality, because we did the first one where the initial discovery was made. And this is sort of part two after a partial skull of a hominality child named Litimela was found there. So maybe